Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of What the Fantasy. I am your host tonight. My name is Zadeh Cantabedian. You can find me at Twitter at ZCantsFF. My friends call me Z, but we're probably not friends, so just call me Zadeh. This is my co-host to my right. This is Brandon at HeyB on Twitter. This is our guest tonight, Ben Weiner from Inside, host of the Pylon Dons podcast. He is here tonight. He is our third guest. We are going to talk about training camp reports. We're going to talk about running backs from the week one of the preseason. But first, before we get to training camp reports, I want to get to Fantasy Football Expo reports. Brandon, it was reported that you went streaking through the quad at the Fantasy Football Expo, and then you were seen 30 minutes later at KFC butt naked in the drive-thru. Fact or fiction?
I can't confirm or deny those reports. Actually, no, that's not true. But it was a great time. Sad you couldn't make it, but the second year was definitely better than the first year. Felt way more comfortable, met a lot more people, did a lot more networking, talked with a lot of great people, participated in a flag football tournament where, you know, I didn't get injured. There was one person that got seriously injured, which was sad, but everything else was really fun for the weekend.
And I saw that you won a high hand at the poker tournament.
I did the poker tournament, won the high hand, so that was nice. So that covered the poker and everything, and I got to know Drew Davenport a little bit better. He actually Excellent. Gave me and my wife a ride during the weekend, so it was a great time.
That sounds awesome. I saw all the pictures on Twitter, everybody sharing their experiences. It seemed like a really kind of fulfilling experience, and it seemed like there were more people there this year than there were last year. But yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing. Ben, welcome to the show. I love Ben. Him and I, we clicked up on Twitter sometime earlier this year. Ben, you had me at AJ Dillon, and I never looked back ever since then, man. How are you doing, dude? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thank you guys so much. It's an honor and pleasure to be on What the Fantasy with both of you guys. Really excited. We finally get to talk face-to-face, talk about some of our favorite things. And actually, the Fantasy Football Expo, that sounded amazing, Brendan. I actually have one or two questions for you because I didn't have the pleasure to go this year. And as someone, I really am very passionate about fantasy football. I'm very passionate about podcasting, trying to become an analyst. And I really want to grow in that space. And I'm really looking forward to hopefully going next year. What was probably the highlight of your experience there? Just giving me something to look forward to, you know?
I would say... just like getting to know certain people. I got in a group chat on Twitter of a lot of people. And, you know, especially with the Scott Fishbowl, everyone has the, you know, avatar. So you don't know what they really look like. So meeting them, knowing what they look like, just talking football with everyone. You know, I had long talks with, plenty of different people. And you just, not gonna lie, I have some social anxiety. So last year I struggled a lot more than this year. But just going up to people that, you know, are huge in the industry that normally you would think, you know, we're too busy to talk to you, but we'll have long conversations with you. And you'll never talk to everyone you want to, but I met so many more people this year and, you know, made so many connections. So I would definitely recommend going next year.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. And Brendan, also, I want to just comment on something you just said as well, because I actually, believe it or not, I'm very loud. I'm very extroverted. I also have a lot of social anxiety. It's a totally normal thing. It's healthy to talk about. And I can come up on a podcast that's my own or someone else's and scream from the rooftops about AJ Dillon. But if I saw someone that I was really like someone I looked up to in the fantasy space or just even meeting a new person, that would totally get me a little unnerved as well. And like that's something that I definitely work through also. So I'm right there with you, brother. And hopefully next year we can grab a beer or something there.
Definitely. There are plenty of beers and shots to be had. And I would recommend if you go, staying until Monday if you can, because on Sunday night, everyone that's still in Canton, they go to this hole-in-the-wall bar. I didn't know about it last year, but they do karaoke there. I went there.
Ooh.
And I had the greatest time, spent, you know, way too much money. There's tons of shots flowing and everything, but there's probably like, you know, probably 80 of us in there in this small little bar. The bartenders were overwhelmed a little bit, but it was a great time. Everyone's doing karaoke and everyone's mingling. It's kind of like a nice end to, you know, the good weekend.
That's awesome. And Zara, like you said, I'm so happy that we're finally in a chance to chat. I feel like we've been tweeting at each other for months, just back and forth, balancing points, generally in agreement, but sometimes some healthy, challenging discussion. So I'm really excited that you asked me to come on today. And I'm really excited to get the chance to discuss with you live.
Yeah, man, I've listened to your podcast, you know, and I really like you, and I like what you have to say on your podcast and your co-host. I mean, you guys are very intelligent people in the fantasy space, and I mean, like, you guys deserve all the success that you guys get out here, man. I mean, there's still room to grow. There's still room to grow for so many people. You know, I think I see new people coming on every day, and I don't know when you joined up and when you got in the industry, but it's just all about being kind of like, you know, like just self-made and just grinding and talking to people and going to things like the Fantasy Football Expo. I haven't been there yet. I got to go. It looked like a fantastic experience and looked like an excellent party. And, you know, I got to, you know, I my partying days are behind me, but I mean, I could definitely make an exception and definitely meet you out there, Ben. I mean, like,
let's get a room. Let's get us to it.
It's car. Great. Let's split it. Let's yeah. have it, dude.
What the Fantasy Pylon Don's room. We'll all split the room.
I love Done. It.
Let's I do love it, dude. I'll get AJ on and we'll be locked in because him and I, we really wanted to go this year. But right now I actually recently started a new job. So I'm in Virginia training for a couple of weeks. Congrats. And I just couldn't – thank you. I really appreciate it. I just couldn't get the time off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I actually had COVID like 2 weeks.
Yeah, you mentioned that. How have you been feeling?
Oh, way better now. But it took some time to recover. COVID's got some weird after symptoms. It's got some lingering effects, you know, so – pretty terrible, but I won't dwell too much on that. I want to keep the party going from the Fantasy Football Expo to post week one discussion of the preseason. I think we've all been anticipating this preseason for week one for a while now, because we've all been like kind of just having the same discussions, going in circles, talking about the same rookie prospects, talking about how depth charts are going to be constructed, offensive philosophy, this and that. The list is endless. And finally, we have one data point with week one, and we can kind of project and create trajectories of players' outlooks for the regular season with that first data point, right? And, you know, looking at the preseason, it's great to look at veterans, but I think most of all, it's really good to look at rookies coming into the league, especially for Dynasty. And the fantasy space is predominantly Dynasty right now. And I was fascinated to look at a lot of rookie running backs, especially like, you know, I think we all had our own specific rankings coming into the preseason, and we've kind of compiled a list to talk about tonight. First up, I'll let you guys break it down, and you guys can tell me about your, you know, and tell me about how you feel about these guys. And first guy has been the man of the like proverbial hour. Like, this guy has been the star of the preseason. I think everybody knows who we're talking about, Isaiah Pacheco. Ben, guest of the show, you go first. Tell me what you think about Isaiah Pacheco and what his outlook is, man.
So I'm really excited about Isaiah Pacheco, and I'm really excited about him for a couple of reasons. I got to see him play live, and I love getting the chance to watch a guy play live before I really get a chance to like analyze him from a fantasy perspective. I was at the Ohio State Rutgers game last fall in New Brunswick, which was like a really awesome time. I saw Garrett Wilson play there too. And that it was that day when I decided I had Garrett Wilson over Olave. But I got to see Pacheco. He was so shifty, had so much burst. And the other thing is, and I think we can all agree on this, we all follow other people in the space. We all have people that we respect, people whose processes that we see similar to ours. And I'm personally a huge fan of JJ Zacharyson and his work. So when I kept an eye on this guy, and then I heard JJ come out of the woodworks, and then he has the fastest time at the 40-yard dash, and then he's drafted to an ambiguous backfield, my attention is had. Unfortunately, I actually traded him away in Dynasty about 2 weeks ago. I was a little bored. Bad call. I actually was happy with the deal overall. We can save that for another time. But he's a guy who I'm really targeting everywhere, because no one seems to be able to make up their mind on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's a guy who has some excuses as to why he hasn't produced, but at the same time, not very many. And it's really not unfathomable for a 215-pound 4.32 rusher to be a better fit in this offense than Clyde is. So I'm really excited about Pacheco, especially at cost. And I think he can be a plug-and-play guy immediately.
You know what? And I can't be too mad at you for trading him away. I mean, I think, like, you know, as a seventh round running back, I think, you know, the odds that he will have, like, you know, elite RB1 success. And I don't know what people are forecasting his success to be or what his ceiling is, but I think it might, you know, people are kind of there because their heads are in the clouds right now with all the offseason hype. So like trading away value at a seventh round, you know, and you probably got him for nothing in the draft or off free agency after rookie draft, you know. So trading him away and acquiring whatever you did get for him is perfectly reasonable. You know, I can't be too mad at you about that. But Brandon, how do you feel about Isaiah Pacheco going into the season?
So it's funny. I was actually on a podcast earlier talking about him as kind of a dynasty sleeper, not necessarily a sleeper this year. And I also talked about Rutgers, how horrible that offense was because him and Bo Belton, I really love both players, but the offense was just not overly functional, so they couldn't really see their talent. I'm not giving up on Edwards Hilaire yet. I think beginning last season, before he got hurt, you really started to see him, you know, kind of maybe gain some footing in that offense. Three of the first four games, he had really, you know, really good performances, even though he had to fumble, I think, in the first or second game. Then he got hurt and kind of gone back and forth. I think part of the problem with him not really showing the production yet is kind of like Andy Reid has this, like, he wants to pass the ball. He just wants to pass the ball. And sometimes I feel like they don't utilize the running backs, whoever that running back is. So anyway, long way of saying, I think Pacheco can be a really good flex player this year. I just think if he does get good playing time, I don't think CEH is going away. So it's kind of a timeshare. But having him for Dynasty, if he really shows out, you know, they might cut bait with CEH eventually, and he could be someone that, you know, really fits that offense well. So I guess I'm kind of like on the fence both ways, but I think he's definitely someone I like. And can I ask you, Ben, what did you trade him for?
So this deal happened about a month ago. And for context, I'm actually pretty still comfortable with this deal because one guy, and this is very off topic, I think Chase Claypool is criminally undervalued right now. If you look at his statistics year over year, the only difference on a literal throw for throw, reception for reception basis is he had a terrible case of touchdown regression. He was still a top 40 wide receiver last year. He had a very similar number of receptions, yards per target, just didn't get into the end zone 11 times again. So for me, I view this player that we were touting as a DK Metcalf type athlete and talent. And then a year later, he did. He absolutely choked down the stretch. And that scandal as the season was ending on that fourth down, that was, of course, going to leave a bad taste in people's mouths. But I traded Pacheco, TDP, and Jalen Tolbert 3-for-1 for Claypool, with the thought process being, so I was doing a dynasty rebuild, and I took like 9 rookies, give or take. I'm like, not all of these guys are going to hit. These 3 guys are the guys I'm not feeling the greatest about. And here's a guy who I think could be a sneaky top 24 guy in a couple of years. So I can live with it. It's just right now I feel like I could have got a whole lot more for him, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a steal, what you did. Even though I like Tolbert, you know, and everything. And because what you're really looking at, there's the hype with Pacheco. But, I mean, is he really going to be like a running back one? You know, like that's a big stretch for a seventh rounder. Obviously possible. But like you say, you could get more. But I think you got a great deal there. So I agree with Claypool. Are you – I know this is a little off tangent, but are you worried at all with the George Pickens pick that kind of stops Claypool's ceiling a little bit?
Admittedly, no. And I have a real answer for that. And the answer is that I know Deontay Johnson just re-upped on a 2-year deal, but they're playing Chase Claypool in the slot now. I don't feel that him and George Pickens are going to be contending for the same targets. So they're going to have Pickens on the outside, Claypool in the slot. And I like the idea of Claypool in the slot because that makes me feel like they're going to use him in a high volume role. And I think that'll really be beneficial to him. And like, I think there's sometimes when two receivers cancel each other out a little bit, and sometimes they don't hurt each other. Sometimes they don't help each other. I feel like that Pickens can open things up for Claypool. Maybe the overall ceiling is capped, like maybe a top 12, top 15 ceiling is capped, but I'm not really concerned about my evaluation on Chase Claypool as a likely top 36 guy. And also, I wanted to comment also, Brandon, on something you said that I really enjoyed, just giving Clyde Edwards-Helaire time. Also, like, he was the youngest running back in his class, and I think it's so important that, like, look, I'm 24 years old. I'm nowhere near the height of my powers as a human being right now. And to assume that like a 21-year-old guy coming off with injuries, the pressures of the NFL, so it takes guys time to figure it out. So I actually, as much as I like Pacheco, I have a lot of respect for your more moderate opinion and giving Clyde a bit of a benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and if I might chime in here and ride on the coattails of what Ben said real quick, I mean, I'm a fan of CEH. I've done film breakdowns of him, and I like him. I appreciate him for what he is as a runner, right? And I think that's the key. I think people want their running backs to be good in every single dimension of the position, which is fine, but not everybody can be a Christian McCaffrey, right? Like, not everybody can be good at every single thing all at once. CEH is good at certain things, right? And just like anybody else, like, there needs to be a system fit. And like you were saying, Brandon, Andy Reid, all they want to do is throw the ball, right? They just want to throw the ball all the time, which doesn't really give CEH the room to grow as a runner, because he's just kind of like the side piece. He's a side ornament. Like, okay, so here's another example. Another rookie who's kind of like, I feel, is a system piece. Treylon Burks, I feel, is going to be a system wide receiver, right? I don't think he can succeed in any other system but the Titans system. And getting back to CEH, people have they have grief with him because he was a first-round pick, and admittedly, he shouldn't have been a first-round pick. He shouldn't have been. He should have been a third-round pick, probably, maybe a late second, more probably a third, though. And I think that's where people are so upset with fantasy people specifically are upset with CEH, and that's why the community is so down on him. But I think if you ask coaches in the NFL or just high school football coaches, they like CEH and they appreciate him for him. They appreciate him as a player. So, you know, with that said, I think we're all kind of on the same page with Isaiah Pacheco. I think, Ben, you bring a really kind of grounded kind of perspective to the table. Like, you understand, and Brandon too, you know, we understand this is the 7th round rookie, right? He's having a good camp and he's being used out of the slot, and we should pay attention to the drum beats, but we should also capitalize on value and being able to acquire future picks or chase Claypool and get values where we can, right? And we'll move on to our second running back. Our second running back, I think, you know, I was saying Isaiah Pacheco is the guy that has been talked about, but I think after the first week of the preseason, Isaiah Pacheco moved down a tier, and Dameon Pierce has taken Isaiah Pacheco's spot. Brandon, tell us, what do you think about Dameon Pierce coming into the season? Were you high on him? How do you feel after the first week of the preseason? Tell us what you think, man.
So coming out of Florida, I was a little undecided. I kind of went back and forth because they truly did not use their running backs correctly. He should have got the bulk of the carries last year, but when he did get the carries, he got, you know, he was very efficient and everything. And I watched some film, and some film I wasn't like overly thrilled with. And then I saw where he got drafted to the Texans, and obviously a great spot. My only worry for him is I believe he was a 4th rounder. So it's kind of like he has to show out this year, because with the huge 2023 running back class, they'll get another running back higher. So, there's a lot of pressure on him, but, you know, 5 for 49, he looked very explosive. You know, I kind of wondered what they're going to do with Marlon Mack. I still wonder about that. There's still probably going to be some sort of timeshare, but I would have to, from all the reports, it sounds like Dameon Pierce is going to lead that. And it might be a situation kind of like the Jets with Michael Carter, where, you know, they might draft another running back, but he's still in their plans, which obviously isn't the high ceiling we want, but, you know, still that kind of Michael Carter type role, you know, is still a great piece for Dynasty. So I'm actually very interested to see how he does in the rest of the Texans offense, because I think they're going to be sneaky this year, especially fantasy wise.
I love it. I love everything you just said. And if anything, I only want to inflate it further, because everything you said, I echo completely with maybe an oomph more gusto, because I think Dameon Pierce is an absolute dog. One thing that's really exciting, and this is just talking about process for a second, of course, film study is more important than highlights. But I think there's an underrated case for highlights now and again as a part of the process, because highlights demonstrate capability. Like, I'm not saying that a player should be judged on the merit of his highlights, but if a player has no highlights, well, then he's probably not very capable. He's probably not very special. And Dameon Pierce looked good on film. It would have been great if he was more, if he had a little bit more volume in that Florida offense. However, some of his highlight reels, especially his receptions, were crazy. I consider Dameon Pierce to be a plus pass catching back, believe it or not, which isn't something people really talk about. But that's something I saw in his highlights and something I saw in his tape. And I'm actually really excited about this Houston Texans offense. I don't know how much I've listened to a couple of episodes. I love your guys' work. Not a lot of sports gambling talk, which isn't something I really delve into either, but +3,000 on the Houston Texans to win the division, hammering it. hammering it. It's one of my hottest takes. And the reason for that is, A, I don't think the AFC South is very good. And B, I think the Houston Texans are very underrated. And I think Dameon Pierce is going to be a very large part of this offense. I think he's in that tier of guys who could really be a league winner right off the bat.
I just want to say, I mean, you said Dameon Pierce has got that dog in him. And Brandon, I think we need to get like a dog drop so we can just like, you know, get a woof woof every time we believe a player is a dog.
We need to get more drops.
We got to get some sound drops. And we can do like a Chihuahua drop too. It doesn't have to be like a big Rottweiler. We can go bah, bah, like a little something cute. Like that'd be nice. But yeah, and I'll put my two cents in about Dameon Pierce real quick. I think like, so what's funny is because Dameon Pierce, I started catching up with the rookie class in January, like about right when December ended.
Got it.
And Dameon Pierce was the first guy I looked at, and I didn't know it was Dameon Pierce. I saw his name, but I didn't know who he was. I didn't know he was a prospect. Like, I just saw a running back playing against Clemson one game, and I was like, oh, this guy did something special. And it was a clip of where he was, it was like a zone, inside zone left, and he wanted to bounce it out to the right, and he kind of like gave the linebacker a little jab step and put the linebacker off balance and then cut it back into the gap that he was supposed to go to. And I kind of put up a little clip of that. And then after he got drafted, I was like, that guy runs like that guy I saw at Clemson. And I went back and looked at Dameon. I was like, oh, that's the same guy? That's the same Dameon Pierce? And what I saw from week one of the NFL preseason is a running back who looks like he wants those touches. Like, I want to curse. Like, I want to say, like, he wants those effing touches. Like, he wants to eat. Like, he ran so hard. I mean, he had some pretty good holes, but the dude ran hard. He ran with his pad level low. He ran with the pads forward. He was decisive. I like Marlon Mack, right? Like, but Marlon Mack isn't what Dameon Pierce is. Dameon Pierce is so much more agile than Marlon Mack is. And we'll see what happens with the rest of the preseason. But Pierce looked so hungry. He looks so hungry. I'm very excited to watch him this week. We already got games. I don't know who they're playing, but I'm very excited to watch him this week.
Do you mind if I get a little spicy real quick before we move on?
Go for it.
Of the rookie running backs, and this is not a dynasty take, this is a 2022 redraft take. Of the rookie running backs, I'm expecting Dameon Pierce to be the second producer behind Breece Hall. I have him over everyone else.
I don't think that's crazy.
No, it's not crazy at all. Brandon, you
especially
want to
say that? I guess crazy? We all have tons of spice tolerance. Especially
with Walker's hernia too. But yeah, I think Pierce definitely could do that.
And as far as like his fantasy outlook, I think we might see a split. I think he's going to challenge Marlon Mack for the. I think it's going to be an RB1A and RB1B by the start of the season. I honestly do, and that's not a hot take by any means. That's a very rational take. And I think we're going to, as far as a fantasy outlook, he'll be like a low end RB2 for the first month of the season. But I think, you know, it's wise to invest in him at, I think he's at 10th round ADP right now, and then just hold and wait for him to break away from Marlon Mack and get like I think he can get a 60% rushing share. So yeah, I like that. We're all kind of fired about Dameon Pierce. I don't know anybody that isn't. Our next running back is one of my favorites. My rookie RB3 behind Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker is Brian Robinson. This was my rookie RB3 coming into the season, and I'm victory lapping all over week one and into today. and it's sad because it comes at the cost of my boy Antonio Gibson. For those that know me, you know I love Antonio Gibson. But Brian Robinson, he put his stamp on a drive after Antonio Gibson fumbled. Brian Robinson came in, ran just like he did at Alabama. People are still sleeping on him. People are still white-knuckling and holding on to Gibson. But Brandon or Ben, how do you feel about Brian Robinson's performance and the whole situation in Washington and whatnot?
I'm going to do my best to actually talk about Brian Robinson and not just discuss the Antonio Gibson thing. Because it's driving me crazy. Why do they hate Antonio Gibson? What did he do wrong? Like, aside from a couple of fumbles.
Preach.
Like, he was an RB1 with one shin for the love of Tom Brady. He was an RB1 with one leg. But anyhow, Brian Robinson is certainly proving his Alabama pedigree. He was a guy who I was pretty even with consensus on before the draft. And the reason for that is, look, I felt like, he's a little bit of an older running back. Does not have an early breakout age. However, looks great on tape, great production profile. I felt like he's going to come in and be an NFL-ready guy. And that's what he's been, for the record. It almost sometimes feels like Brian Robinson is coming in and doing exactly what he was drafted to do, be a steady, steady presence. Now, I would love if Antonio Gibson would get his helmet out of his butt and maybe pick things up a little bit, because he's too talented of a guy not to. In terms of his redraft prospects this year, I'm a little bit concerned that him and Antonio Gibson could be in a really ugly committee. I don't think there's any chance Antonio Gibson loses the job. I think both of them are going to be strong best ball picks at ADP, because they're both going to have some good weeks. They're both good on the goal line. They both actually, I think Brian Robinson has enough hands for a three down skill set, as does Antonio Gibson. So I think it's going to be a very, very sticky situation to predict at this point in time. However, for Dynasty, I'm really just hoping that, clearly, I hope that Ron Rivera or Antonio Gibson leaves, one or the other, because they clearly just don't get along. And then Antonio Gibson and Brian Robinson can both be great running backs, and then everyone's happy. But for right now, I'm not really – I guess at cost, I'm intrigued at both, but I'm not really projecting either player or Robinson to exceed that ADP.
Brandon, drop it like it's hot.
All right, so if it was just those two running backs, I think I'd be fine with it. But then you throw McKissick in there, and he takes a lot of the passing, and he's like a guy, if I go zero running back, I'm targeting. I don't get it either. There's just something. I don't know if Rivera really didn't want to draft Antonio Gibson. I don't know what it is, but like, Gibson's produced, and I know that fumble's bad, and they're like making him do punt protection and doing all this stuff. So, but I think you're correct. I still think Gibson is going to be the number one. You know, I don't think Rivera is that stupid. I mean, I don't want to be rude to Rivera. I think he's a good coach, but like with running backs, you know, other than CMC, he's always split time with running backs. So, but I think Antonio Gibson's probably a running back too, maybe on the lower end. Because of this, Brian Robinson's, you know, flex, maybe, you know, and then McKissick's, you know, lowering that to the flex. They're kind of, it's a kind of mess. That ceiling that, you know, we've kind of talked about with Antonio Gibson last year of a running back one. I just, in Washington, that's not going to happen because they don't want to give him the passing work. And I just don't, I don't get, you know, everything you said, I agree with. I don't get what they don't like about Antonio Gibson. There was one play last year where he took like a screen pass, ran it for 50 yards for a touchdown. It was like,
I believe it was 73 yards against the Bills.
73 yards, yes. Yeah.
I watched, I was like, this is amazing. Why don't they give him the ball like this? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Clearly capable. Actually, I'm happy you mentioned the punt protection thing, because honestly, I was really, really relieved that I didn't get a notification about like him being on punt protection and the punt getting blocked. I was like, please just like let it end here. He's still a guy. I think now is honestly a really good time to buy both backs in Dynasty, because it can't get uglier for either one of them. And both of them are clearly talented guys. Like, if Antonio Gibson, like let's make up a hypothetical for the sake of it. If he left Washington and signed as the lead back in Kansas City, he'd be like a top six running back. It'd be a joke. And honestly, if Brian Robinson was the lead back, he'd probably have a lot of talent and opportunity as well. So maybe it could be a good time to buy in a bear market.
Yeah, and I want to bring up a couple, like when all this came out, I got some trade offers for Antonio Gibson, which were trash. I got one that they were going to send me Mike Davis in the 2023, like, fourth round pick. And I was like, I just said no. I didn't even like,
I will, you know, I will fight that person.
I just said reject.
I've never gotten into a physical altercation over fantasy football, but if that happened to me, that could have been a new one for me.
The one quick thing I will say about Antonio Gibson, as far as technique and why he is fumbling, it was rumored or, you know, reported that Antonio Gibson, what he does is when he's picking different gaps to run through, it causes him like anatomically to move the ball away from his body. And I'm guessing that defensive coaches might know this because, you know, it's become an issue. So that's contributing to his fumbling issues because he's using poor technique when he's using getting the ball away from his body and not securing it properly. And, you know, that's something we should be looking out for when we're scouting running backs, you know, as fantasy analysts. So that's just a little tidbit as to why. So let him fix that. But I think him working with a punt team and the third team offense is a clear indication of Rivera's sentiments and the weight that he's giving to this fumbling issue. It's not Antonio Gibson running a few laps or Antonio Gibson, you know, working with a second team. He's with a third team now, and he's doing punt protection on special teams. So, you know, this is kind of significant when you look at it. I mean, I'm not going to try to get hot takey, but I mean, like, it's possible that Brian Robinson takes the spot, but it's probably not going to happen. It's probably not going to happen.
Z, because we're friends now and I can call you Z, I hope you consider me a friend. I consider you one.
We're friends.
I have a statement and then a follow-up question, if that's all right. Yeah. The statement is, he's clearly in the doghouse. Just pointing something out, though, for all those dynasty managers out there and even redraft. You know who else was in the doghouse for quite some time last year? Brandon Ayuk. Things change. Gibson could be in the doghouse for 8 weeks. Robinson could fumble once and run with the job. This game we play is crazy. So if you believe in a talent, you should absolutely get your guy. And also, I just wanted to ask a little bit. Brian Robinson was your running back 3 pre-draft. Could you walk me through a little bit of that?
Yeah, Brian Robinson was my pre-draft running back 3. What really bumped him up for me was that, first of all, I thought he was way better than Isaiah Spiller, right? So, and it's, and second of all, there were a lot of things. He had very underrated hands. He's very good at catching the ball away from his body. And he has very good feet. Like, he has very small, like, he has not small, but he has very nimble feet. He has very good footwork, and it's efficient footwork, right? He's not just a big running back that just hurts people. He can hurt people. He'll run over linebackers. He will. But he also has very good feet, and he understands how to use his weight and distribute his weight efficiently. And to me, that's a very important thing, especially when you're learning to run in different schemes. It's very important to understand how to distribute your weight properly. Like another example of that is this. We're not going to talk about this guy today, but Tyrion Davis Price. He understands he's a bigger back, but he has very good footwork and he has very good vision. And for that reason, you know, they ran a lot of power at LSU, right? They didn't run a lot of zone. And a lot of people were asking, well, why they draft Tyrion Davis Price? Because they didn't run a lot of zone at LSU. Well, the thing is, he has really good second level vision, and he understands how to follow blocks and move efficiently with his feet, right? So it's these kinds of things that not only stand out to me, but obviously stand out to Kyle Shanahan and are valued high when evaluating running backs. So, and plus he has athleticism to complement it. Whereas Isaiah Spiller, he wants to run like that. We'll talk about that later. But so that was my process for Brian Robinson.
Awesome. Thank you. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And our next running back is Ty Chandler. He looked good in his first debut against the Vikings, against the Raiders. It seems like Ty Chandler's emergence has stirred up talks of, you know, moving Alexander Mattison, this and that. It seems like he's jumped this depth chart in front of Kenny Nwangu already. Brandon, how do you feel about Ty Chandler going into the season?
So when I was doing my rookie scouting before the draft, I didn't really, because I was kind of surprised how fast Ty Chandler ran at the combine too. I didn't realize he was that fast. So I was like, let me watch his film again. And at North Carolina, he like bumped up. Wait, I don't remember exactly, but he was like pretty high on my rookie running backs. And I think he's doing what exactly I thought he would do. I think he has good burst. He's good speed. He's a good receiver out of the backfield. And, you know, he can return kicks. He does a little bit of everything. Like, you know, you said with Madison, I don't know if they'll let, you know, if they're going to trade him or anything, but this is, I believe, Madison's last year on his deal. So I think Chandler could be the second back, or he could, you know, if Dalvin, you know, kind of starts declining, he could take over, you know, eventually there too. I just do wonder, you know, since they're going to be a little more offensive forward thinking now with O'Connell, if they find ways to get Chandler the ball, you know, whereas Zimmer, you know, it's pretty much just Dalvin run up the middle, you know, and throw it to Jefferson every now and then. I kind of hope they open up the offense. And I really love Ty Chandler. I was disappointed when I saw he went to Minnesota just because of that depth chart. But it seems like he's moving up already. So, you know, sometimes you shouldn't necessarily be scared of the depth chart, because if that player is that good, he, you know, he can move up himself. So I love Ty Chandler.
That is a great point you made, that if you love a player, you shouldn't be scared by a depth chart. And Brandon, where were you 3 months ago when I loved Ty Chandler and I got scared off by the depth chart? Where were you, buddy? I needed you there because, excuse me, a little cough. When me and my co-host did our rookie running backs preview, my running back six was Ty Chandler, way higher than consensus. He was my pick to be this year's Elijah Mitchell. And I'd probably argue if he was in Kansas City right now, he'd be getting the kind of buzz that Isaiah Pacheco is making. Because the thing with Ty Chandler is he's 6 feet tall, he's 210 pounds, and he runs a sub-4.4. And honestly, I'm not going to fault the guy for being behind Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. And I was very excited that he still produced incredibly well in the ACC. The depth chart broke my heart a little bit because, I mean, we all Dalvin Cook needs no introduction. I'm not a big Alexander Mattison guy, but he's certainly been around the NFL for quite some time. And Kenny Nwangwu is someone I've been excited about as well, just as like a deeper stash. So I was just like, oh, God, I can't believe that this guy who I'm so excited about, I went on the mic and declared that he was next, a surprise rookie running back to a like, oh, he's screwed. And I'm happy to see him playing well. Like, I know I backed off the take a little bit because of the depth chart in terms of his overall value, but I'm not shocked to see, oh, Ty Chandler gave you 5 for 50 in a preseason game. That makes perfect sense to me. He's a stud. So I think in redraft this year, I'd be pretty impressed if he jumps from fourth to second as the true handcuff to Dalvin Cook. But I think in Dynasty, he's as intriguing a stash as absolutely anyone out there.
Yeah, he deserves you know, the same value pick as does, I think, like, you know, possibly TDP. I mean, he can, because Alexander Mattison is not long for this team anymore, you know. And I've even thrown out, like, on another discussion, like, I've even thrown out Sean McVay trading for one of these running backs who are not long for their teams, like an Alexander Mattison, and kind of bringing them in with the Rams dealing with their injuries, you know. And there's, you know, that's a whole other conversation that I would love to have another time. But, you know, and I was a fan of Mattison coming out of Boise. I still am a fan of him. But, you know, man, but Ty Chandler, like, watching him, like, he can get to the edge and he's gone. Like, linebackers are falling over themselves trying to get to this guy. And on special teams, he's a shoo-in. Like, he's a shoo-in. He can burn. He can burn special teams. He can go, man. This kid can scoot. And like you said, he's got the size. He's got a very solid BMI. You know, this guy has a very all-natural skill set. And I don't know too much about him as a prospect. I didn't get too deep into him. But, I mean, after what I saw from week one of the preseason, I am an instant fan, Ben.
So if you want to get really excited, what really got me hyped up about Ty Chandler is when you go through his tape, and I'm talking tape now, not highlights, we're talking tape, hands, speed. But he has a little bit of not to go. Are you guys basketball fans?
I am.
Got a little bit of cardiac Kemba, like a little like late, okay, like yeah, early yeah. 2010s Kemba Walker it factor, you know, double crossover against Pittsburgh. Because Ty Chandler, every time he broke off a big run on tape, a 40-yard, a 50-yard run to the house, it seemed like it was in the fourth quarter. Like, he had a run, I believe, against Wake Forest. That's off the top of my head, so don't quote me on that, where he just won the game on a 50-yard run. And I'm just watching this guy go, just, like, losing my mind because he just takes, like, this B-gap run and houses it to lead North Carolina to victory. Who wouldn't want to root for that guy?
Yeah, I remember in that game, I think he had a few – I think he had a huge game against Wake Forest. He had, like, a few touchdowns. And yeah, he definitely came up big. I think one of the reasons people weren't as high on him is he was a fifth-year guy. He went to Tennessee first, then transferred to North Carolina. Didn't have great production at Tennessee, but Tennessee's kind of been a little bit of a dumpster fire up until recently. So I think that's part of it. And I think sometimes – just like dynasty wise, you kind of look at like 3 or 4 year like spans. So like, why does it matter if he stayed in school for 5 years, if you just really care that he produces for 3 or 4 years? I think the age thing, by some people take that a little too seriously.
Totally. And also I'm trying to find, so in his game against Wake Forest, he ran on 22 attempts for 213 yards and 4 touchdowns in one game.
That's
and
tasty.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I am a bigger NFL fan than college. I generally, with college, I'll watch here and there, and I research a lot of like fantasy relevant guys. But Wake Forest like wasn't a pushover this past year, if I'm correct, right? They went 7-2 in conference and 11-3 overall.
Their offense was really good. Their defense was pretty trashy, but still,
that's helpful.
But still, 200 yards is 200 yards. I mean, that's what I always say. Hey, if you play a bad defense, you need to still perform, because there's plenty of players that go against a bad defense and don't perform. So you've got to take your opportunity. So I still think there's some credit to be had there.
Yeah. It's awesome. He's so freaking good.
I can't wait till he gets the starting role and gets a bunch of touches. He's not that far away, guys. He's not that far away. And, you know, he's probably even like on the – I wouldn't be surprised if he popped up for some reason on the redraft, you know, on the redraft radar sometime this year. So redraft guys, dynasty guys, keep tabs on Ty Chandler. He is a specimen, that's for sure. And our final guy, our final rookie from the week one of the preseason. This guy, when I bring up his name, I get the feels because, you know, I wasn't high on him coming into the season, and it's Isaiah Spiller. You know, I feel for him because he wants it, and he's an intelligent running back. And I put out a tweet earlier that said that his want of what he prefers to do on the field is he wants to be an agile running back. He understands when to bounce a play. He understands when to redirect. He's very smart. He's a very intelligent running back. The problem is that his athleticism doesn't complement his preferred playing style, right? He doesn't really, you know, lean into the weight and the power that he can deliver, I feel. So, you know, we saw him play this week with the Chargers, and I put up a cut-up of all his runs, and the majority of the people were like, is this guy running in sand? Like, who is this? Like, Isaiah Spiller doesn't look like, you know, and I'm not completely surprised that Joshua Kelly is getting the reps over Isaiah Spiller. I hope it works out for him. We still have 3 more weeks of the preseason, I believe. Ben, tell me about Isaiah Spiller, man.
I'm weirdly neutral on Isaiah Spiller. I'm not a fan, but at the same time, I also feel like he kind of gets a bad rap. Because let's rewind way, way back. Like, I'm talking like a year or two ago when people are like, oh, the top two running backs in the class are Breece Hall and Isaiah Spiller. That's certainly not the narrative anymore, but that was at the time. That's what people were debating. That's what people were talking about. And I was a Breece Hall guy. I got the receipts. I'm not going to pull them up right now. But that was a real conversation people were having. I'd say as recently as maybe like last October, like early in this season. And I think that whether that's fair or not, because there's been a fall from grace for Isaiah Spiller in terms of narrative, we're a little less inclined to be in on him. So I'm trying to compare Isaiah Spiller a little bit more to the guys he's been drafted by, as opposed to the prospect level we were kind of maybe unfairly building him up to be. And I'm looking at a running back who's the youngest running back in the class, has a 3-down skill set, is certainly not flawless and has a ways to go. I think my favorite thing about Isaiah Spiller is that he's on the Los Angeles Chargers, and that they've been trying to fill this role of honestly, a pretty ugly between the 20s running back to spell Austin Eckler for quite some time. However, if the right guy gets into that role and can get 12, 13 touches a game, maybe a check down here or there, that guy could be fantasy relevant. I was hoping it was going to be Larry Roundtree, who must be like the nicest, most jolly person in the NFL, because he is slow as hell, but they love him in LA. And I like him too, so I'm rooting for you, Larry. But I kind of feel like Isaiah Spiller's a guy who I'm not really intrigued with in redraft, unless, God forbid, Austin Eckler goes down. But in Dynasty, I feel like he's a fine pick at ADP.
I'm glad you brought up everything you did, because I'm also a Breece Hall guy. I've been a Breece Hall guy since his freshman year. And you're right. Before the season, people not only were making Isaiah Spiller too, they were saying, take Isaiah Spiller over Breece Hall, which I never understood. So this is the thing with Isaiah Spiller. There are some things that he does very well. And I think my main thing with him is consistency. Sometimes he can run through guys. Sometimes he looks like he should be like the top running back, but I need to see consistency. Sometimes for a back his size, he runs a little too upright. He gets, you know, when he gets hit, you know, he goes down too easily. But I do agree, this is probably the best situation for him as far as he drop, because you're right, they're looking for that guy to go between that. And two, he has some of that skill set of like what they want Eckler to do, to like catch the ball in the backfield and those type of things. So it's not like he can't do that. And I wouldn't be surprised if they run Eckler less, because they gave him a ton of carries last year. And I don't feel like they really want to. It's just they didn't feel great about the other running backs, which is funny if Josh Kelly does get the, you know, running back too. He was there last year. But, you know, another year in the NFL. But, no, I agree. Kind of neutral too. I had Isaiah Spiller as my running back too, but then I kind of changed that because especially the combine workout, I didn't know Kenneth Walker would run that fast either. But yeah, I think Spiller is definitely someone you want in Dynasty. But I think he could have some value in redraft if he truly is that running back too. And like you said, gets, you know, 10 or 12 carries, you know, so that could be a couple receptions, maybe 50 rushing yards, fall in the end zone every now and then. So that would be a fine flex play in redraft.
Yeah, yeah. And Brandon, and my apprehensiveness with it with Isaiah Spiller isn't even concerned about Joshua Kelley in front of him. Like, I think if he just does the right things for the remainder of the preseason, looks good for the remainder of the preseason, he can overtake Joshua Kelley. I'm not worried about Joshua Kelley at all. That O-line that they have, outstanding offensive line. Zion Johnson in the first round. How does the league let Zion Johnson follow the Chargers in the first round? You guys are nuts. You guys are shooting yourselves in the foot. Loved watching him at the Senior Bowl take reps. And that's also another discussion I would love to have. Just talk about Zion Johnson. But Isaiah Spiller, in behind that line, can find success, right? Can find success. And he is actually a really good complement to what Austin Eckler needs. He is the, I believe he is the largest running back in that backfield right now. And he can help Austin Eckler take breathers. He can learn the game, learn the pace of the NFL. And I think things can work out his way. Yes, he's not athletically talented, but I think things will work out his way. I think he has a real shot at finding success.
He's really young. Like, I think it goes back to, it's funny enough, like talking about starting the show with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a guy who really just maybe just needs some time, and kind of finishing it up with Isaiah Spiller, a guy who very well also just may need some time. It's coming full circle.
Yeah. Yeah, some of these guys need to mature. Running backs need to mature, just like a fine wine. Mm-hmm. Well, that was awesome. That was great talking about this rookie running backs, getting a lot of stuff off our chest. I think we had a lot of thoughts, and we got it all out on the table. Our next segment is something that I hold dear to my heart. I think this is kind of central. You know, we love winning in fantasy football, but I feel like this is central to the culture of fantasy football, right? And it's that it's about the Sunday. The Sunday of the season of for the 17 weeks every week, right? That's that magical Sunday where magic is in the air, right? And we all wake up on Sundays during football season like it's Christmas morning. And I think we all have a certain tradition. We just really look forward to a great day of football and insanity and point scoring and swings. And I think that's kind of like the draft, like the draft is a big part of the culture of fantasy football, right? It's just this really awesome thing that we look forward to that lasts about an hour or 2 hours, you know, for the regular fast draft, and then just goes away. But we work towards it for like months, right? And waking up on Sunday, we all have our traditions. You know, my tradition for waking up Sunday is I get up early. I'm actually up late looking at Ian Rappaport's 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock injury reports coming in the morning. I don't know if you guys know about those. You know, about he reports on injuries early in the morning, right? And then they report on him later on in the morning. So I'm up till about 1:30, 2 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, waiting on Rappaport to come with injury predictions because he gets them early. He gets them really early, right? So I get those. So my Sunday morning starts Sunday morning, like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm looking for reports from beat writers. Then I get up in the morning. I kind of go downstairs. I clean up. I like my space nice and clean. I like a clean space. I make coffee. I put on my necessary live streams. My preferred live stream of choice is the Start Sit Show with Sigmund Bloom and Chris Allen at Football Guys. You know, Sigmund Bloom I consider him a mentor, and I love watching him, and that's my preferred show. And then I'll put on like ESPN just in the background while I'm doing whatever and checking my lineups. And that's kind of like I look forward to it every single morning. And I just wanted to like talk about that and, you know, see how other fantasy football players, you know, perceive Sundays and how they do Sundays. So Ben, tell us about how you prep for the, you know, big day.
Yeah. Wow. I really can't wait for it. I'm counting down literally the seconds. I'm usually up around 9:30, regardless of whether I was like out of the party the night before or had a good night's sleep in. Regardless, on football Sundays, I got to be up and at it about that time. Doesn't matter if I've had a couple drinks the night before. Doesn't matter if I'm there early. Got to be up around then. I am from Boston originally, So every single morning, or at least any morning worth living, starts with a large iced coffee from Dunkin' Donuts. And then also, so this is like a fun fact about me, because I know we're like Twitter friends, now we're getting to know each other. I actually lost 70 pounds. I used to be like obese. And I lost a lot
of weight. Congrats, man. That's amazing. Stoked.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's a lot of hard work. And honestly, I'm pretty anal about my health now, full transparency. However, on a Sunday, on a very special football Sunday, that's like my time when I get to cut loose a little bit. I'm off the diet, no egg whites, no protein shakes. So I like to like get like a nice New York bagel. Maybe I'll toss a little chicken cutlet on there, make an egg sandwich, or I'll make some French toast.
You do you, Ben.
Something good, you know, like, you know, it's football Sunday. I'm enjoying. I'm excited.
Live your life.
Thank you. I'm actually really not a huge live stream guy that morning, and it's for a couple of reasons. The first is I'm usually cleaning my place because I love to have my friends over. I love to host. And honestly, I try and make myself really accessible to my friends and family who play fantasy, because you know what? They take the time to listen to my podcast, support me, and also put up with me literally never shutting up about it. So the least I can do is that if they have a lineup question, is be near my phone to give my take on it on a last second lineup thing. So I'm usually doing that. And then right before kickoff, my buddies will get there around 12:45. And we always order food right before kickoff because it always gets there in between the first and the second quarter, which is right when you start to get hungry for lunch. And that's my routine, and I love it.
I stopped. I love that routine, man. That's a really solid routine. And I actually stopped responding to my friends' texts about Star State questions because they came in from everywhere. And I was like, all right, I'm trying to enjoy my Sunday. I can't do it. And then, like, if you mess up, they respond to you later, and they're like, oh, yeah, thanks for telling me to start freaking, you know, Baker Mayfield or whatever. I'm like, all right, no more. I'm done.
Wait, so this is a true story, actually. So the reason I started a new job is my old company, I was working at a startup, it went out of business. But one of my coworkers, who I hadn't met at the time, we had only known each other on Slack, a guy named Danny Elkin, really nice guy. It was championship week. And he asked me who he should start. And I forget who the other player was. But I told him to start Boston Scott, and he won like $2,000 on like on that championship, and he was over the moon. Like the first time we met, he hugged me. So you know, sometimes it can be a little bit validating if you really.
Did he tip you out? Tell me he tipped you out.
No, but he gave me a really big high five, and you know what?
That we'll take it.
Is even better we'll than money. It. That's priceless, even, right?
Always better. Brandon, how do you do it, buddy?
All right, so you talked about, you know, partying the night before. So I'm a big, you know, I'm involved in Devi, you know, fantasy football, and so I'm big on Saturday. So it's a marathon every weekend, Saturday and Sunday. So depending on, you know, how hungover I am, I'm going to wake up between 8 and 10. And then, you know, I check some injury reports, get some McDonald's, some breakfast burritos, a large Coke. I think they have the best Coke of any place. And then I set all my lineups. I'm in way too many leagues, so that does take a considerable amount of time. Then I decide if I'm going to, you know, dabble in a couple of DFS lineups before kickoff. Set up one TV, just watch the Jags, and then one TV for Red Zone. Usually I'll pay attention to the Red Zone TV pretty early because the Jags are out of it by like the second quarter. You know, and then, you know, I order delivery also, like you said, usually some wings and everything. So, yeah, I have that two TV set up pretty much all day, to kind of keep track of all, you know, all the different games.
Brandon, you got that set up. You got a very special setup going in. And when you mentioned Red Zone, I thought about that first Sunday where it ticks down, you know, and like, it's counting down. And then it gets to this like final 10. I'm getting goosebumps like right now. And then it hits zero. And then you're like, I made it. I didn't die another year. I'm still here. I didn't do anything stupid. I didn't get audited by the IRS for all the crypto I had to report. Like, I'm so happy I'm still here for another year.
I'm telling you, if you keep on saying that on our pod, they're going to get you eventually.
Get out of it. Yeah, man. But like, that's part of it, right? Like, that's like just making it there and like putting in all the hard work. And dude, just that second when it hits zero, like that feeling never gets old. And like waking up on Sundays, it just never gets old. It's so special because like, I think like at a human level, we all deal with so much stuff every single day. And those Sundays are so special. It's not even, it's more than it is about winning. it's just, there's just a magic to it. And I don't know what it is, but it's, that's why I wanted to talk about it, because it's such a special thing to me. It's why I, you know, I'm still a part of the space, and why I put in the work is because, like, I like helping people on like Twitter when they ask questions. I like them. When I think about them asking me questions, because you want them to have that feeling, and you want them to come back for that feeling all the time. So, yeah. Anyways,
I have chills right now. And honestly, I thought this was like, I'm just to give both of you some credit. I thought this was a really creative question. Like, I, of course, I do my own podcast as well, and we usually just keep it like strictly to like the fantasy thing. So to have like this discussion, I was like, wow, like that's a really cool idea. So maybe I'll get a little bit more off script of that sort of thing also. So I was really happy when you asked it. And I really enjoyed both of your answers as well. I've actually never had a McDonald's breakfast burrito. So Brandon, I may need to put it to the test for you, because that sounds a little pretty tasty.
I've never even heard of that before. Yeah, I've never seen a McDonald's breakfast burrito, man.
It's a, you know,
Jacksonville thing.
No, they have it. They have a combo meal where it comes with two. I mean, they're not big burritos, but it's a nice, like, start your day off kind of thing. Not too big. Gotcha.
So I actually order a lot of McDonald's on football Sundays too, but I'll get a McFlurry. And the secret is to get an Oreo McFlurry. So it's cookies and cream, but also with the M&Ms. This is how I got the 270 pounds, if anyone was curious. But it is unbelievable, and I fully recommend it.
I really don't eat anything. I'm just drinking coffee and pacing, and my cats are terrified at me because I'm just overly ecstatic and just way too on edge. No, I'm just kidding. No, I don't even think – I'm not even sure if I, like – I probably just snack – I don't know, food for some reason. Like, yeah, I know, like, football and food are go hand in hand, but for some reason, like, I'm all about just, like, if my team's scoring and I'm, like – if I'm standing in the corner of the room with like the football, like I'm not moving from this corner of the room until my team has just stopped putting up points. And then it's time to go do something. Like, I'm very superstitious and weird about it. But yeah, I mean, thank you for like, thank you guys for telling me about that. Like, and again, this is a very special thing to me. And I thought it'd be a really good topic for discussion, because it doesn't just, we don't just talk about like players in fantasy football. We talk about the culture of fantasy football. And, you know, and that's the culture of fantasy football are the people and the traditions that the people bring along with it. So, you know, thank you for talking about it. And we'll move on to our, yeah, thank you. And we'll move on to our final topic for the night. We're going to talk about looking ahead to preseason week two. I want both of you guys to give me two players that you guys are looking forward to watching in the second week of the preseason. Ben, give me your first guy.
Z, I hate to let you down here, because I think I heard you say earlier you like this guy. And admittedly, I am really, really off this guy. I really don't want anything to do with him in any format. However, I think it's important I watch, because I'm a very big believer that you need to be open-minded in fantasy. And when you backtrack hard, you backtrack fast. A prime example is last year, before I really wasn't big into Najee Harris until I like had an epiphany that he was going to be a top six running back and started drafting him everywhere. I got into a debate with my buddy about offensive line play. I was really concerned about it. He said, you're being ridiculous. Look at the volume, yada, yada, yada. Rest is history. I backtracked hard. I backtracked fast, and I reaped the rewards of being open-minded. I'm very, very out on Treylon Burks for a myriad of reasons. So I'm going to be watching just to make sure that I am correct in that stance, because if he proves me wrong, I want to know about it, and the sooner the better.
For the record, I am not high on Treylon Burks. When I said he was a system, I got you. When I said he's a system wide receiver, I was implying that he's a system wide receiver in the way that AJ Brown was. You know, AJ Brown was not a system wide receiver. AJ Brown is more of a complete wide receiver, but Treylon Burks, he still has limitations, right? He still has a lot of growth. He has a lot of growth, but he has the attributes to where he complements the heavy play action run game that Derrick Henry brings, right? So his athleticism can lead to those big explosive, you know, the fly routes and the slant routes and break them off for 60-yard touchdowns that A.J. Brown always did, right? So I think that's what I meant when I said
he's a system. Okay, huge relief, because I was like, oh, my God. Like, he's like – because I know, like, system can sometimes be good or bad, because if a guy is a system guy and a system that's favorable, like – you know, right. Austin Eckler's in a system that puts him on the goal line and has him on the field for every third down. That's a pretty good system for Austin Eckler. But I'm going to be watching just to make sure that I don't miss anything, because I would hate to be caught holding the bag there.
It deserves a lot more attention. Brandon, who's your first guy?
All right. Well, I'm going to say I do like Treylon Burks. So, but I get what you're saying, because he is a raw prospect. But I mean, I think he landed in a pretty good spot, and I graded him out pretty high. But you know, there are those concerns. So moving on, I kind of want to see if Zay Jones can continue his momentum with Trevor Lawrence. You know, he had I think a third of the targets that Trevor threw. He had some nice plays, and he was an afterthought. You know, when they picked up Christian Kirk, you know, and I've talked to someone. I was like, maybe I was hyping up the wrong Jones and Marvin Jones, and maybe Zay Jones is going to have a bigger connection. And really, you know, I still think there's limitations of where Zay Jones could go. He's still probably like a flex, you know, at best for me. But if he's a flex and the other two receivers can be, you know, in the wide receiver two range, then that offense can be a lot better than I even anticipated it being. And especially with ETN there. So I want to see if they can continue that, you know, chemistry with Zay Jones. And I'm guessing more of the wide receivers will play. So I'm interested in that.
I love you for that take, Brandon. I'm a big Zay Jones fan. I had Zay Jones stashed since the end of the season. When I first heard that he signed with Jacksonville, I was like, go pick him up. This guy's going to start. This guy's going to be part of the offense. Look at what they paid him, first of all. And I don't always follow the money, but I like Zay Jones as he closed out the season. Zay Jones as a prospect actually was part of the – he was drafted by the Buffalo Bills. And when they drafted Gabriel Davis, I believe they cut Zay Jones. And they are almost replicas of each other as far as like college production goes, as far as build goes, as far as just game goes. They are almost replicas of each other. And Zay Jones, much like Gabriel Davis, is coming into his own right now. And, you know, Peterson saw something. The Jags saw something. And Zay Jones, man, yeah. And he looked good during his first week. And hopefully he built some chemistry with Trevor Lawrence. Ben, who's your second guy, man?
Tyler Beatty, and I'm really excited about him. He played pretty well last week. People were optimistic. Nick Ercolano of BDGE, he likes to say this, and I quote this often because I think it's one of the most brilliant one-liners, like up there with the Matthew Berry fantasy production is the intersectionality of talent and opportunity. Nick likes to say, don't go looking for injuries in fantasy football. They will find you. So J.K. Dobbins is one of my biggest fades this year because I don't think he's going to be ready. And even if he's on the field, I don't know how he's going to look. And I think if you just like look at this backfield, J.K. Dobbins is coming off the ACL tear. Gus Edwards coming off the injury. Mike Davis, old as dirt. Tyler Beatty is probably the fastest and most explosive guy in this backfield right now. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's the type of talent that J.K. Dobbins was healthy coming out as a prospect. But I don't think it's crazy that Tyler Beatty in this very, very moment, like, look here with me right here, right now, could be a bigger contributor than J.K. Dobbins just right now. Like, not forever, not in Dynasty, just today. Speaking right now, I think he could be a more explosive running back, and I'm really excited for him. I think he really has a chance to make an impact in redraft if he can start to continue that momentum and see the field.
You know, and I wasn't a big fan of Tyler. I was a big fan of Tyler Beatty coming out of college. The thing with me is I didn't believe he had the, let's say, the BMI to be a early down back, but he proved it. He proved me wrong. You know, he proved it through his work, and I'm done. I'm done denying him. Tyler Beatty, I think, is, like you said, yeah, that's such an awesome saying that you said. Don't go looking for injuries. The injuries will find you. That's brilliant.
I can't take the credit, but I say it all the time because
yeah,
it's just true. They're coming, whether you like it or not. Some guy we love, God forbid, he's going to get hurt. Guys get hurt every single year. Tim Patrick already went down. Kenneth Walker had surgery today. Zach Wilt, they're coming. They're coming to find us. Why are we going to go look for them?
Right. And we heard, I think John Harbaugh yesterday said that J.K. Dobbins is not quite ready, something along the lines of not quite ready. And how many times have we heard that already this preseason? J.K. Dobbins is not quite ready. He's not quite there. And also now with fantasy Twitter, when everybody having discourse between each other instead of like being alone in the dark and wondering what they're going to do, we have a lot of actually professional medical practitioners who are coming on saying, you know, stay away from J.K. Dobbins. Edwin Porras, you know, I met Edwin when he had like 3,000 followers and he was working for the Undroppables, right? And like Edwin, he knows his stuff, man. Like he says, like, you know, watch out for these guys. Dr. Jesse Morse is on the scene. Jesse Morse is a very smart guy. And, you know, it's, in a different discussion, they're all saying, you know, ease up on the Cam Akers love because the Achilles injury, it's obviously something to be afraid of. But yeah, J.K. Dobbins, man. I mean, like, it's that drumbeat, right? It's that drumbeat that we hear and that we see all the time. And we have to give credence to these things. We have to give credence to these things. It would be irresponsible to not give any credence to a certain degree to approach it and hedge and pick up Tyler Beatty where you can on the cheap, right? Like, pick him up, stash him if you have a deep enough league. Tyler Beatty has a skill set. Don't worry if he can't do it. He can do it all. He can run between the tackles in an RPO system with Lamar Jackson. The holes will be there. He has a receiving upside. Don't worry about it. So I like that second guy. I like that second guy, Ben. Brandon, who's your final guy, man?
Let me just say, Ben, I thought we were like so much on the same wavelength before we got to this segment.
Ooh.
And because I like Tyler Beatty, but I think a big thing that I liked about him coming out was his receiving ability. And the Ravens don't necessarily throw to the running backs a ton. So that's one worry I have. And I'm a big J.K. Dobbins fan, so I know all this could happen. But I hope even if he misses a few games, I still think, I'm still in on that train. This is like a kind of a guy that's kind of probably not on anyone's radar. It's Tajay Sharpe with the Bears. He had a nice game last week with Justin Fields, a couple nice catches. He had some, decent games with the Falcons. And the main thing is they need to find another receiver that's not Darnell Mooney. So I want to see who has, a connection with the Bears. It's probably not a great, like, fantasy-wise, but, they're going to be behind. So that second receiver is going to be fantasy relevant, especially in redraft. Probably your third or fourth, fifth receiver, but still, for depth and everything. And I just want to see, because I don't love what they're doing for Justin Fields. I don't think they're setting him up for success based on the weapons. So if any of these mediocre receivers, can step up, I would love to see it.
Whatever Antonio Gibson did to Ron Rivera, Justin Fields must have done something worse to the Chicago Bears, because they clearly don't want to help him. I loved Justin Fields coming out. I was probably even wrong about how high I was on him. He was my quarterback 2 in the class last year, and like that's very much moved around. But he was my quarterback 2 for fantasy and just football. And they really just don't want – they're putting guys like me out there. Like, they're putting, like, Kroger's bag boys, Uber drivers, teachers. Like, not to, like, crap all over into these professions, but, like, they're not putting pro athletes on the field next to this guy. They're putting schmucks. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't understand like why teams do this to their young franchise quarterbacks. And we saw with Andrew Luck how they just didn't give him the protection they deserve. Like, these guys have Hall of Fame trajectory. And I'm not saying that about Justin Fields. He has Hall of Fame trajectory. But protect your young guys. Don't make them terrified to play the game at a professional level, because you're playing with the best. You're playing against the best defensive players in the world, and you're not protecting them as they mature, right? As they mature. They didn't come into the league as complete players, right? So it's not rockets. Like, this kind of stuff makes me very upset, and it's disturbing. Like, this is very irresponsible as a multi-million dollar organization. You do not provide the protection. You take away James Daniels, the right guard, and you let him walk away. Sign him. He's not expensive. He's a solid right guard, dude. I like James Daniel. He can anchor that butt down and stop the bull rush. He's athletic. He knows how to work good in slide protection and double teams. And they let him just walk. They got nothing over there. They got who's their second round pick from last year who's working with the second team?
Tevin Jenkins,
dude. He's been all busted up and working with the second team now. He's out there with the second team during preseason. He's not even playing with the first team, man. Like, so provide for Justin Fields, man. And harping on what Brandon said about Tajay Sharpe, even though he might not be fantasy relevant, as a player himself, his success will trickle through for the rest of the offense and allow Justin Fields to be a better player and allow, the rest of the offensive players to find more success.
Absolutely. And Brendan, and if I may also, I love the fact that you went really deep down the rabbit hole and you want to talk about Tajay Sharpe. That's the kind of thing that gets me as a fantasy football analyst really excited, because look, I don't want to say I feel corny talking about, oh, I got to watch Treylon Burks. But it's nice to know there's people out there who's like, holy crap, Tajay Sharpe is going to do something today. And additionally, to your point also that you felt like we were really in sync, I think it's honestly, it's nice to disagree sometimes. Like, my co-host AJ and I today, we got into a very, very heated exchange on Rashad Penny and Kenneth Walker. There was even a little bit of name calling, some take lock being thrown out. But he's like one of my best friends. Like, those things happen. But it's nice, though, because if we always agreed, then there wouldn't be much of a point to any of this. So I'm really excited to see how it plays out. And thank you for talking about Tajae Sharpe. That is inherently so exciting.
It's refreshing, Brandon. You can tell who plays in deep leagues by the players they talk about, right? All right, boys. Well, that will be the show for tonight. I mean, that was really good. We touched on a lot of good things, man. Kept it just over an hour, and you know, we stayed on course, and we got some brilliant opinions. We had Ben. Thank you so much for coming on, man. We're gonna have you again on. I'm not just saying that. That's just not. We're gonna have you again on during the season.
Definitely.
You know, you're awesome, dude. We loved having you on, Brandon. Thank you for, you know, being back, and congratulations on the high hand again. Hopefully you you know, you build on that and put it into to some DFS lineups and don't lose it all out there. But yeah, thank you for everybody for tuning in. And we are back on a weekly basis going into the season and looking forward to seeing what this week two of the preseason brings us. For What the Fantasy, I am Zadi Kantabedian. Brandon Hay, my co-host, and Ben are my guest. Thank you, everybody, and good night.